see what was up your sleeve? Did you use it or?
I don't know. What's up yours?
Jason Leisure is kicking Matt Eberflus's ass.
I don't know if I really look at it that way, Jay.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at the Score. This is a very, very special honor. For you.
You are right about miserable Jason Leisure. He joins us now.
I feel like Stu Gatz doesn't really like this segment.
I think you're great. I think you're miserable.
It might be the one thing that you and I have in common is that we both don't like this segment.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
You want to believe that they're telling you the truth and what they're saying is straightforward, but that, of course, isn't how it works here.
Jason Leisure.
Do you think this is the best conference as Lakers in the time that you've been here, that you went up there?
Yes, because we're having a lot of fun doing it. So fun with fun comes a lot of wins, and with a lot of wins comes a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Fun is winning. Winning is fun. I believe have fun first, then you win. Then you have more fun in the clubhouse.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We are thankful that Jason Leisure made time for us here on the Spiegel and Holmes show as the Bears get ready to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars in London. Hey, Jason, how are you?
What's up, Lawrence? Matt?
Nice to talk to you, Jason. I loved that interaction with DJ Moore that Tanny put in the open right there, asking him if it's the best offense he's been a part of, and him channeling Ozzie Guillen with the winning is fun, and then fun is winning. You could see how much DJ Moore enjoyed that. Did he need it as much as it seemed like he needed it? For his own personal well-being, Jason.
I don't think that he needed it like that, Matt, but it helps. It really helps when you look at how the season has started with Caleb Williams and DJ Moore, and you factor in that it is against the Carolina Panthers, a team that he would want to really do well against. I think it helps. And it helps the way they did it, too. It helps that they hit on at least two of those passes in the intermediate to long range. And DJ Moore, you know, he got eight targets. That was really pretty well spread out, though. I mean, Caleb Williams threw 29 passes, and I'm looking at the sheet right now. Eight targets to Moore, six for Odunze and Allen each, and four for Komet. That's kind of how you would draw it up. If you went into the season sketching out what you thought the passing offense would look like, that's pretty much it. That's the template, I think.
How would you describe, if you do believe there's been growth from Caleb Williams, how would you describe it manifesting itself?
There's totally growth from him. And while I would put a qualifier, Lawrence, on the Bears at large, that and their offense at large, okay, they beat up on the Rams and the Panthers. Those are two of the worst defenses. There is no such qualifier ever on progress for Caleb Williams at this stage. Him doing that against anybody is significant. And I think now these last two games of his, if this is who he is and where and kind of the direction he's going to keep heading, and it'll take a lot better play to maintain that level of production against better teams. But if this is who he's going to be and where he's going, then that context of that kind of makes those first three games make more sense to me. I can kind of draw a straight line that, you know, going upwardly from that first game to his fifth game. And you're seeing really good recognition. You're seeing him develop different steps of being a professional quarterback, playing the underneath game. And then this last week, it was still a lot of underneath, but he's hit. He was better in the intermediate range. And he hit, I think, two of the longer, two deep shots. He would have had another completion. DJ Moore was readily admitting this, that he would have had another 15 or so yard completion if DJ Moore hadn't dropped one in the second half. You're also seeing the Bears talk about something on a Monday, for example, Lawrence. You hear them talk about, hey, we need to work on this with Caleb this week. And then you're seeing him do it on Sunday. That's really good. That's really promising.
What other young quarterbacks have you been around other than Justin, obviously? And in Miami, like, could you compare, let me ask it this way. Could you compare what you're seeing over these first five games with what you've seen over the first five games with other young quarterbacks? Because there's a texter kind of correctly calling out some of the national media for allowing and inflaming the conversation that we were just having in the last segment about Jaden Daniels versus Caleb, and it was Caleb versus Justin, and it's been Justin versus Mitch and stuff like that. So maybe you could give the context of what you're seeing Caleb do as compared to other young quarterbacks you have seen, Jason.
I think that especially in Chicago, it helps to compare a little bit or take into account the recent history of the previous two quarterbacks that they drafted high in Fields and Trubisky. And if you look at Mitch Trubisky at the end of 2019, so what's that, his third season?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Nagy is airing out publicly that he doesn't yet know how to read defenses consistently and hasn't mastered their offense at that point. End of year three, Matt. And if you look at Justin Fields, it's against the Panthers, but Justin Fields didn't put together the kind of game that Caleb Williams just played probably until the Denver game of last year. So early year three, which, by the way, is kind of a messy game to bring up for Justin because he helped throw that one away big time at the end. And then he had a really good game the next week against the Commanders. But the point is it took Justin Fields pretty deep into his timeline to be able to do all of those things, to be able to sit back there and put it all together in one game. And Justin Fields can be a really good quarterback in a game or in a couple of games, a game here and there. He still has yet to be able to do it consistently, and so has Caleb Williams. He's only in his fifth game. But you're seeing just advanced level play by him. I don't think you would hear someone say about Caleb Williams right now what Matt Nagy was saying about Mitch Trubisky of he doesn't know how to read defenses yet, and he doesn't really know how to run our offense yet.
Don't you think those comparisons are actually important for the education of the fan base to understand what kind of development they're seeing?
Yeah, it's just they're important data points. It doesn't have to be about a direct comparison of would you rather have Justin Fields or would you rather have Caleb Williams right now today? And I would much rather have Caleb Williams if I was the Bears, and that's the choice they made. And the offers that they got for Fields versus the offers you could imagine them getting for the number one pick this year with Caleb Williams tells you that the rest of the league sees it that way too. I think comparing to these other data points helps you understand, it helps you have some perspective on how well or how slowly things are coming along for Caleb Williams. And Jaden Daniels is a good comparison. Jaden Daniels is somebody that you're going to want to keep an eye on all year. I think the biggest thing I would say, Matt, in that whole argument though, or that whole conversation is, let's not pencil in Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams as a data point 4 or 5 weeks in. Or 2 weeks in. What were we, 2 or 3 weeks in when people were saying, oh, Jaden Daniels, look at this. The Bears got it wrong. The Bears should have taken Jaden. I mean, I'm sure I heard that on TV within the first 2 or 3 weeks. That's pretty early to be making that kind of declaration.
I'd like to also add to what you're saying, and we're talking with Jason Leisure, who covers the Bears for the Sun Times, as the Bears get ready to play in London this weekend. The other reason why I think looking backwards in Bears history with the quarterback is because you can look and find the places where they messed up with the other, with the most recent quarterbacks before Caleb. You can go that situation where you had the coach not knowing and probably not wanting the quarterback that you signed as a free agent being the starter with no intention of playing the guy that you drafted until that guy was such a disaster that you had to make a move, and the only move to make was then to play Mitch when he clearly wasn't ready. And then you can look at the development of Justin Fields and go, they were so hung up on how this was going to look with Andy Dalton, but they weren't brave enough to make Justin Fields a project and say, he's the number three quarterback, and we're going to develop him as such. But instead it was, well, we got this package of plays and we're going to, and the development arc, the whole idea of how a quarterback is trained, I think this right here, the significance of how Caleb has been brought along and seemingly the Bears doing this in a better way, having a better protocol, is why I think looking backwards does make some sense.
That's a really important point. And your guy, Nick Saban, always talks about process versus result. We don't have the result yet on Caleb Williams. And you don't really even have to play the result on Justin Fields or Mitch Trubisky to look at the process and say the process was a debacle with Trubisky for the reasons that you just outlined, and a debacle with Justin Fields for the reasons you just outlined, and very, very sound and prudent and what any of us would with common sense do when it came to Caleb Williams. The Bears are low-key pretty well run right now. They're really not the same old Bears. I think we talked about this last week, Lawrence. Ryan Poles shifted his tune, I think, I believe it was on draft night when they drafted Caleb Williams. It was the first time I heard him say something kind of stern about, we need to throw out this history, enough of this history.
Yep.
Because prior to that, Ryan Poles had been, we've had many conversations on and off, on the record and in interviews and stuff, where he said he knows that all the Bears' history at quarterback is not his fault, but he's very aware of the waters he's swimming in. He's very aware of what it means, even in his first or second year, to ask Bears fans to be patient, which I'm 40 years old and grew up in Chicago, and that's all they've ever done is ask for your patience. Always. A perpetual ask. And so when he says, hey, we're not the same old Bears, that's paraphrasing what he said, it's true. And that's why they would have cut Justin Fields had they not found a trade partner for him. They would not have done it wrong. They were not in any way going to have a foolish process with Caleb Williams.
So where does Matt Eberflus fit in to this team being well run? There's some people that separate him and Poles. Should they be?
I do. Yeah, I think Poles has done a really good job, and I think Eberflus has left. There's a lot to prove still. And even now, he's steadied things these last 2 weeks. Think about how we look at him right now today versus coming off the Indy game, which was just ham-handed in every possible way. And now we look at him and say, okay, things are calmer for now. You still kind of have this big burden of proof on him to show that he can keep it calm even as they get against better teams, and to show that he can direct the offense, because that's part of a head coach's job, even if you spent your entire career on defense. But Matt, right now, and I'm saying this to myself too, if we're going to put Matt Eberflus under the microscope for all of the problems that they've had with game management and with the offense and with things we didn't necessarily like seeing in Caleb Williams' performance the first 3 weeks, then we also have to give him credit when he says, hey, I'm going to get involved in this offense and I'm going to go to where the trouble is and work on this. When you see things going better, he deserves some credit for that. Things are calm and headed the right way right now today as we speak.
He also deserves some credit for at least fostering the atmosphere where this leadership council feels enabled and empowered to go ahead and tell the coaches what they think. And like, this is continues to be a good thing. Do we know where the no huddle, where so much no huddle came from? Whose idea that was? Was it as palpably different this past week than it was the first 4 weeks of the season in this offense, Jason?
I would think that is something that Caleb Williams has pushed for, because he's been pretty good at that. He not only is good at that, but I think it's comfortable for him. And you see him being able to move and, more importantly, think at a fast pace. You did see some game operation type issues those first 3 weeks with, getting to the line late or getting to the line too late and getting a delay of game, things like that. Just kind of this rushed, sometimes you don't get a delay of game, but you rush the play so much that it's a little off just from the jump. And I didn't really see any of that the last 2 weeks. He was pretty, maybe I'm missing something as I'm kind of scrolling back through my mind over the last two games, but it looked pretty smooth as far as the part that Caleb Williams can control and is in charge of.
You are one of the most compassionate people that I know, and I know that sometimes can be in conflict when it comes to covering a football team.
That sounded very personal and very like you guys know each other.
He's literally one of my best friends.
Interesting.
How concerned are you about Jaquan Brisker?
Oh, man. Very. Because you don't even know how many concussions he's had. You don't know which ones have been diagnosed or not diagnosed. And he's so young, and I feel like we've had so many conversations about this already. It's very concerning. And you find these guys, though. Tua's in the same situation right now. Like, do you think Tua's going to retire, Lawrence, even after all this?
No, I think that as soon as he's cleared, he's going to be back out there. And I think that, especially considering how badly things have gone for the Dolphins since he left, I think they will welcome him back and celebrate him being back.
It's troubling, but I think I think you're right. But it's troubling because I think guys, if they're going to play football, then they're in for the concussions. And maybe you will have they're willing to tolerate that. They're willing to accept that part of it. And maybe you have guys who get one really bad one and it scares them. And they say, okay, I can't keep doing this to myself. But I think more often than not, you get guys who go into it accepting it. And there is little to no consideration given to the long-term effects. And I haven't really had any conversations with this with Jaquan Brisker about this recently. I do believe this came up with him last year about continuing to play through this. And I mean, this is what he does. This is what he does. What would you want him to do? He would have to stop playing football, or he'd have to stop playing the way he plays, which it makes him good.
Yeah.
I mean, part of what's dangerous for him, it makes him a dangerous defensive player. It would be difficult for a player in his position who plays his style to change that for health reasons.
What would his absence mean to the functionality of a really good secondary against a smart quarterback who has had his troubles, obviously, this year? But what would Brisker's absence mean, Jason?
He's just an explosive playmaker, Matt. But I would say that their secondary is the best it's been. I can't remember the last time it was this well stocked. And I think the last year of Ryan Pace running the team, they had Jalen Johnson and a bunch of practice squad guys. And then they go into this year with three starting corners that you really like, two safeties that you really like, a promising, very promising young up-and-comer in Brisker, and a two-time All-Pro in Kevin Byard. And they have three corners you could play in a pinch if you needed to. And they have depth at safety with Elijah Hicks and other guys. Like, I think that they can survive Jaquan Brisker missing time more than they could some other positions. Now, that I don't want to discount what an explosive playmaker is. I think they can get steady replacement-level play for Jaquan Brisker. They can't get somebody that's going to blitz like he does and make explosive plays like he does, turnovers and things like that.
I'd offer the 2006 defensive backfield. Maybe the 2000.
That's a heck of a long time ago.
I know. Maybe the 2012 one, because I think Tim Jennings made the Pro Bowl that year. But you've got Charles Tillman and Nathan Vasher as your corners.
Mm-hmm. You've got
Mike Brown, Chris Harris, and Daniel Manning.
Forgot it's Chris Harris, too.
Like, that's damn. Like, that's real good.
Yeah, been a lot
good.
Of seasons since then, though. Been a lot of Artie Burns since then.
You're correct. You are definitely correct on that. What do you think of the Bears' choice of traveling on yesterday, them taking off? Because I know that there isn't a lot of data on how to do this, but I thought it was interesting that they made that choice.
I think it makes total sense. I think if you are encountering some out-of-the-ordinary issue in terms of climate or time zone difference, so I would apply similar thinking to going to Seattle or LA, or especially somewhere like Denver, where the altitude is a factor. Maybe if you're going down to play one of the Florida teams when it's still hot down there in October or September, you want to get down there and acclimate to it. And in the case of London, I mean, I flew last night too, and I got 1.5 hours of sleep maybe on that flight. It's hard for me to think about being a professional athlete and doing what they did 5 years ago, where they had basically a normal day at Hallis Hall on Thursday of that week, then flew Thursday night into Friday morning. You know, let's get out there Friday for a little walkthrough, and 2 days later we're going to play a game. I can't imagine everybody felt their best. That's not a one obvious reason why they lost that game to the Raiders back then, but I don't think it helped. The sooner they were to get out here and get used to everything and kind of get rested and be feeling somewhat normal, the better for them. So this makes perfect sense to me what they did.
So, Jason Leisure, I like knowing that you and Lawrence are good friends. Tell us something about Lawrence we don't know. Would you? I mean, it's my new partner.
You guys know everything. There's nothing not to know about him because he's such an open book on the air. He talks about everything on the air.
No, come on, man. Come on. You guys are tight. Tell me. Said something. Take your time. I'm filibustering for you right now, but it's my new partner here. There's mob members who don't know Lawrence like you know Lawrence. Uh-oh.
And Lawrence talks about everything on the air, man. And on House of L, like as if he doesn't get enough chance to dump out everything that's in his heart and soul and mind every single day on all the right. Score.
Yeah.
He's like, let me get a podcast where I can do that and also maybe make whoever I'm interviewing cry every week. That's why I've never done that thing. That's why I don't want to be on there. I don't want to be on there crying about everything.
I got you. Well, tell us a House of L we should check out then, you know?
Dion Miller.
Okay.
You got to go way back. This is probably 2019, I think, Lawrence, that you interviewed Dion Miller.
Dion Miller was really great.
Big fan.
I saw her the other day walking into Soldier Field.
She's a lovely person. She's also an incredible human being. Like one of the best people. You know, not just absolutely. Really good at the job, but one of the best people in our business.
All right, Jason, you can text me off the air, and then I'll ask Lawrence if it would have been okay if you shared it or not.
So, Jay, while we got you here, you got something for That's Montez?
Not yet, because I haven't seen Tez yet, but I'm going to. I am definitely it's Tez Thursdays, man. This is not if we're going to throwback here. This thing that Shane has come up with, or Tanny has come up with, or they've collaborated on.
It's a collective thing.
Well, Eberflus launched it. He's the one who launched it because he's the one who said it.
Right.
That's Montez.
Come on now.
This week on That's Montez.
In London.
Tez and the family head to Europe. What city? It's London. Top of the morning to you, Tez family. What will they get into? Who's going to tickle one of those guards at the castle? Will it be Tez? Will it be his wife?
That's right.
Someone's getting into trouble and everyone's having fish and chips. This week on That's Montez.
Granny is ready. She's at Big Ben. We can't get Granny back from Big Ben. She won't leave.
So wait.
I know, Tez.
Considering that it happened on Sunday, is Angel Reese on this episode
it's
of
very confusing.
That's Montez?
Yeah, Shane.
No, it's a tape delay. She's when they get back from London, Angel will be on.
That's so weird. Because, Jason, wow. I saw Montez make a beeline for Angel Reese to kiss the ring and say hello before the Bears ran in after pregame warmups on Sunday.
Oh, that's news to me. I didn't see that. You saw that from your seats?
I did.
At Soldier Field?
I saw very close.
This has come out of nowhere. See, the point I was trying to make is that if this is a throwback show like Family Matters or something, then it's got to come out at a certain time on a certain day. It's not streaming where you can just pop on That's Tez on a Tuesday afternoon. But Shane came out ready, man. Shane had that ready to go. That was amazing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Have fun over.
Do we have two episodes this week, Shane? Hold on.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe
we're gonna do another one.
Maybe it's a special episode because they're in London.
Oh yeah, that's Montez.
This week on a double episode of That's Montez. Stick with us after Everybody Hates Chris for another episode. Will Granny drive down the wrong side of the street? Does Mama know what mushy peas are? We'll see on the second episode this week of That's Montez.
Man. Granny wants to drive up to Manchester and see where the Smiths used to play.
It's a special hour-long episode of That's Montez.
Didn't
double
expect.
Episode.
Some weird subplots.
Watch with the whole family.
Yeah.
Stay out of trouble over there, sir. We'll see you when you get back.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks, Jason.
That's Jason Leisure. He's really good at what he does and a great person. My partner has been jonesing to talk some baseball.
It's such good MLB postseason action right now.
So why don't we do it next? Let's here on the it. Score.
The Royals picked it up and got the win, and it was extremely exciting to see that the fan base, because, I mean, obviously we know that the fans at Arrowhead are going to be loud and ruckus and be really into the game, but I haven't got to experience that stadium in Kauffman, sold out, playoffs, and that stuff, and so it was cool to see that kind of combine.
Where do you go Wednesday?
That's the plan. I got to just – it's bye week, so Brittany's vacation and me getting to the Royals game will feud for sure.
Patrick, she could have her vacation while you go to the Royals game, right?
I mean, that's the best thing about my relationship with Brittany is that I don't want to spend any time with her. So she can go on vacation whenever she wants. She wants to take Jackson with her, even better. I don't want to spend any time with either of them. I'll go to the Royals game. They can go on vacation. Go wherever you want.
That's lovely. That's lovely that they have that kind of relationship. Pat Mahomes talking baseball right there, mister.
I hope Mr. Harris is good as well after the leg injury that I caused.
That's very nice of you, Patrick, for you to do that. We should invite Bob Kendrick on.
I'd love to talk to Bob Kendrick.
If the Royals advance, or maybe even if they don't, we should. He's been waiting for this for a long time.
For the Royals to be good. I saw one of the tidbits I saw the other day that the Royals are the first team ever to lose 100 games and then win a playoff series the next year.
Wait. Hold on. You mean to tell me, Matt Spiegel,
sir,
that a team, a franchise,
yeah,
could lose 100 games.
100 games.
And then
get better.
Get better.
Yeah, they don't have to
get
worse.
Not worse.
That's true. That's
Tanny,
true.
Did you know about this?
I'm still getting over Bob Kendrick waiting a long time for this playoff run here. They won a World Series in 2015.
Screw you, Bob.
We've been waiting since 2005.
That's 9 years. Not even a decade. It's a good point.
He's been waiting a long time. And I don't know if you guys remember back in 2020 when the Royals had the really creative idea of with the stadium empty that they would just put people's faces up. They sat Bob next to Patrick.
Oh, that's cool.
Behind home plate.
He's a great seatmate. We had a lot of good talks.
Did you see our guy Danny Parkins?
No, did not. Nope, did not see that. He didn't put it everywhere.
At the game with Nick Wright and the mayor of Kansas City. All three of them together.
Poor Danny, or should I say Rich Danny? But poor Danny for the way that you guys treat him.
No, we love Danny.
We love Danny.
Do you?
Yes.
It's kind of not coming across that way.
Yes, we love Danny. I mean, yeah, I won't speak for them. I love Danny.
I like Danny a lot, man.
Wow, that is not what I asked
set the
you,
record
sir.
Straight. Danny Parkins was a host here for a long time.
I love Danny. I'm happy for him. He's out there living a version of his best life, you know? And truth be told, we know, and because he talked about it, Steph and the kids aren't out there yet, man.
Yeah, it's rough.
It's hard.
It's rough.
So we've talked about that. So I got a lot of love for that man.
Any love that you can show Danny when he tweets something out, understand that the man to chase his dream had a lot to sacrifice.
And it's really instructive on what a family has to do, you know, when you make a decision like that as a family. It's a big, big deal.
It's almost like
he had to endure a baseball game last night. Some sacrifice.
That must have been tough.
That's
really
true. That's true. There is something about it. But this baseball postseason has been as good as they could have asked for.
For the first time in Major League history, all four of the division series are tied at one. Right now, that's never happened before, that all four of them are tied. There have been 8 games in the postseason so far where the team that has scored first has lost. That's happened 8 times already. The Mets have been involved in 4 straight postseason games in which the team that led entering the 8th inning lost the game. 4 times in a row. It's absolutely bananas. Whether they win or they lose, the Mets have this crazy drama surrounding them. And our friend Adam Amin had a great moment as former Cub, briefly, Nick Castellanos had a chance to walk off the Mets the other day.
Winning run at second, 2 down. 1-2 pitch to Castellanos. In the left field, down the line, it's a fair ball, and the Phillies have tied the series. Queens, one apiece, Castellanos the hero.
That is awesome excitement from Adam Amin, and easy to access, I am sure, with just how damn good that series has been. And we've seen crazy stuff. Yesterday, Emmanuel Clase, who actually is very classy.
Who?
Emmanuel Clase.
Class B, as Herbie would say. Shout out to Herbie.
Oh, yeah. That's strong.
Emmanuel Clase.
That's the guy we like. When Cleveland calls in their closer, Emmanuel Clase, and he comes out and he's got the monocle and he's like walking with a cane like Mr. Peanut. You know, he's really extremely classy. He gave up 2 hits and then a 3-run homer yesterday. I mean, that dude's year, he was like Dennis Eckersley. Literally under .70 in ERA and WHIP. First reliever to do that since Dennis Eckersley in 1990.
And he's not the only reliever that we've seen have that happen in the postseason so far.
Devin Williams gave up 2 runs all year and gave up 3 runs on the Alonzo homer to lose that series.
It's wild.
Yeah, man, it's been crazy.
It's been fun, and there's an energy to baseball that's hard to – it's sometimes hard to explain. Those that have been a part of it, whether you're a Cub fan, you're looking at what had happened in that window between 2015 and 2021, or you're a White Sox fan and you're remembering 2005, 2008, like those chases of being in the playoffs, yeah, or man, a couple of years ago when they're going up against the Astros, there's something to it. I've enjoyed this, and this is because we're both, you know, we're into this game for the romance of it.
Yeah, and the history of it.
I love the daytime playoff games.
So do I, man.
I actually kind of prefer it.
It's funny. Somebody texted in the other day, like, it's funny to watch this show now on Twitch and see both hosts looking up at the television to peek at the baseball games. Guilty.
Very guilty. And, I mean, look, it's in our blood, man. Like, this is what this part of the year is so cool. Yeah. It was like what you were breaking down as we started off, where you have this confluence of everything, college football, NFL, basketball's getting ready to get started, hockey starts tonight, the MLB playoffs are going on.
It's like, it feels like a big continuum here. Like, you know, my dad watched baseball playoff games after school, you know? It's like, and now the Roobster comes home and we'll turn on a baseball playoff game.
It was cool too, like some of the little nuggets of things that you learn, like who Aaron Judge was being compared to from a playoff hitting standpoint, to Adam Wainwright telling stories about the guy that he couldn't get out was Aramis Ramirez and telling stories about how Aramis Ramirez was just clean as clock. Then you've got the baseball. This thing with the Padres,
dude,
and the Dodgers.
That series
has blood feud type stuff.
That series has everything. And you know me, I'm all about the Padres. I bet them to win it. I like them. I'm rooting for them. Manny Machado's trying to make me hate them. It's not working. I'm still in love with the Padres. They got a lot of things going on there that are really enjoyable. And now that game tonight, back at their place, that energy is going to be crazy after everything that happened in LA.
I'd like Machado because I think that every team needs a little sandpaper.
And he's that guy for sure. And he's always been that guy.
And the beautiful thing
is, the best player.
Is this isn't like Josh Donaldson dumb stuff. This guy's elite. He's an elite player, and he's out here talking junk.
Like, he threw that ball towards the dugout, and I think it hit the net in front of Dave Roberts.
Yes.
I'm sure he intentionally did it to scare them, but threw it in a way that he knew it would hit the net. Like, and have it come back.
And there are plenty of people who don't like Dave Roberts.
Yeah, I'm one of them. He's a bad guy. There are also plenty of people on Twitter right now, like season ticket holders, saying, hey, I've been watching Manny Machado throw the ball that way after they throw the ball around for a long time. This likely wasn't at Dave Roberts.
Oh, no.
This is just what he does.
Did you read Manny's quote, dude, where he says, that's not what I do. I've done that for a long time. And oh, by the way, they hit our best hitter. They threw a ball at our best hitter. They got to know something's coming. He rolled right into that.
Okay,
he 100% was doing it on purpose. Do not believe that fake news crap tweets that you're talking about.
No, I believe it. So for what it's worth,
I'm not surprised, but Manny, you should not.
Manny Machado to walk or to be hit by a pitch in his first at-bat tonight is plus 1,000.
I'd be interested in that.
Yes.
To walk
I'm
or
putting,
be hit.
I'm putting $5. I've got like $5.20 in my FanDuel account right now.
Let's
I'm putting
do
some
that.
Fun.
Yeah.
I want to make a point about what Jed should be paying attention to here. What Jed Hoyer and the Cubs should be paying attention to. And that is the ability of smart front offices to be volatile, the ability to recover from tenuous situations and stay competitive or get better. Last year at the trade deadline, the New York Mets decided to punt on Max Scherzer, on Justin Verlander, on Mark Canha. They traded 6 players, including big, big money, and set themselves up to either take a breath and take a step back, like a gap year kind of thing, or go for it. And their acquisitions, their low money acquisitions, like Jose Quintana, worked out very well. And they were able to go for it and instead were able to make a buy at this deadline. You can unload from a seemingly tenuous position and reload the very next year. Similarly, in terms of psychology and logic, AJ Preller is a freaking glorious madman for the Padres. They go all in trading for Juan Soto from Washington, give up Mackenzie Gore and CJ Abrams and others, right? And it doesn't quite work. They have a good playoff run, but it doesn't quite work. And then he decides going to have to trade Juan Soto to the Yankees and gets a haul that includes MLB-ready players like Michael King, who was dominant for them in their first series. And is he going tonight? Is it Mike? I think it's Michael King tonight in Game 3. So, like, you can trade for the star and then trade him if it doesn't work out. Like, you can make bold strokes in multiple directions. There are going to be teams that will help bail you out. Do not fear the bold strokes. Get out of your comfort zone and make bold plays this offseason, because it should not be thought of as some kind of death sentence for the life cycle of your franchise.
I'm glad that you're giving data points for people to watch while they're watching all of these teams in the postseason, and the Chicago teams are not. We need to take a timeout. Wani said something really interesting this morning about what Doug Kramer is doing. Stick around. We'll share with you next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
I am in full-ass path.
Speaks, this morning, I'm walking back from the gym, and I'm listening to Mully and Haw, and a conversation with Wani came up about something that we've been discussing. How to use Doug Kramer and why Kari Blasingame isn't on the roster. Check out how Wani sees this.
Do you like that identity they've established with this new kind of getting the power game going by having the center blocking on the goal line and short yardage? Do you think that's too gimmicky? Are you surprised at all, Dave,
that I don't think
Kari Blasingame is available but not used?
Yeah, and the only reason that they're not using him, I promise you, because he's a better blocker, there's no question he wouldn't be on the team, is because of the depth and the concern at the offensive line. You know, you always got guys there limping around for some reason. You know, and then Jenkins gets hurt, right? And Nate Davis, who knows? And we got a lot of guys, probably more than we realize, that are right on the edge of coming off injuries or fighting through them. Right.
Darnell Wright has been hurt earlier in the year. You're so right.
So Flus is sitting there saying, hey, guys, we can't get shorthanded on the offensive line. Get one of these guys ready at fullback. It's tough on them, though. Let me just say this. If you're running an ISO play straight ahead downhill, and I use the expression, I use Jim Flanagan all the time, but Jim Flanagan was a defensive lineman who was a heck of an athlete that ran 4.7, 4.8. So because if you want to do anything outside the tackles, now you're going to have your offensive lineman hit and block a moving target. You know, you're on the edge, and it's a sweep. Anything that's not between the tackles, you got to have a darn good athlete, and that's where your fullbacks, that's where I'd use Cole Kmet. You know, put Mercedes on the line and use Kmet as the fullback. That's where you get caught up. I think you're really limited on what you can do with an offensive lineman as a fullback. Want to run the ISO between the tackles? Go ahead, because that guy's going to be sitting in the hole. You want to run anything on the edge, stretch play, toss play, whatever, it's tough on him. It's real tough.
Now, I'm less concerned about Kramer's athleticism than Wani. I'm more concerned about his strength. If you look at some of Doug's numbers.
He's an offensive lineman, though.
I know, but he's undersized and maybe a little underpowered.
You're anti-center. That's what I think.
I am not. I'm not.
I feel it very personally.
What I'm saying is that I'm less concerned about, though, I'm more concerned about the ISO and duo plays with him than I am him getting outside. You saw the speed.
Yeah, when he was in motion, he actually looked very nimble.
Very fluid. So that's where we quibble, but I love Wani's overall point on this.
Oh, man, it makes all the sense in the world that it's a roster issue. Like, dedicating a roster spot to the fullback versus dedicating a roster spot to the backup center. Without Ryan Bates, Doug Kramer has to be on the roster right now, on the active game day roster as a backup center. There's nobody else to snap it behind Coleman Sheldon, right? Matt Pryor can do a lot of things. He can play both guard sides. He can go out to tackle, but he can't snap it. He's not a center, so they got to have Kramer there. So you look around like, hey, we need a guy. You know what? Why don't we ask that guy? But it's interesting. I don't like your concern about his strength. I feel like that's, you're not valuing the mini fridge.
By the way, here are the numbers. Doug ran a 4.940. So speed is not really an issue for him.
That's pretty good.
I'm just saying that I'm not worried about the speed. Yeah. I'm worried about, but in the role that he's in, I think it's fine.
By the way, I'm with the texter who asks, did Wani just say cosplay? Did he say tossplay or was that cosplay? Because cosplay is like when you dress up in outfits like you're a superhero.
Yes.
And
I think he said tossplay.
You sure about that? Are you
I'm not sure about that?
Is Wani a furry?
That's where this is going.
Do you find Wani in Rosemont?
At the furry convention?
I will tell you that when I ran into a furry convention, that convention was in Pittsburgh.
Okay, so Lawrence validating Wani possibly being a furry.
Hold Listen, on. As long as everyone consents, I have no problem with whatever freak flag you want to fly.
Oh, I'm with you.
Agree. Totally agree.
There's long been no kink shaming in the afternoon.
You damn right.
Here on the score.
I am in full ass pack.
As he's doing his cosplay.
It's very important.
This is really getting somewhere. I need to hear more about you at the furry convention. It was not by choice. It was just you ran into one.
I just happened to be in town. Sure. I went to go see the Cubs and the Pirates play.
I'm new in town.
And this cab driver was very happy to meet me and Mel because we weren't in costumes. And he had just had a really terrible experience with people who were.
Wow.
It was bad.
Yeah, well,
some people live that furry lifestyle a little differently than others. But that's a subject for another time.
425?
By Quacky! If that's what you want to do. But when we come back, let's talk about our experiences at Soldier Field and what it may have opened up for us as a show. That is next here on The Score.